Hey, Echo.
Here I am.
Good to see you yesterday in real life.
I know it's great. I love our funny little small town.
Yeah, that was wild. I saw.
I won't take any meeting time up for it on it, but on the draft that you attached, where there are some proofreading things.
Oh, okay. Yeah, good.
But they're not substantive. It's just like some sentence fragments and stuff like that.
Okay, great. Yeah, just if you want to email them to me or.
Yeah, or I'll do like track changes on it or
Oh,
something.
perfect. Yeah. Thank you. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You look pretty.
Why, thank you. I just put on lipstick. That was all.
Lipstick makes a big difference.
It's my Zoom look.
Oh my.
That's
I have to go
smart.
look for it every time I have a Zoom meeting, but thanks for calling me back. I decided I had to take my dog for a quick run so he would be calm through the meeting.
I hear you on that one. I'm actually at work, so I won't have any dog issues today.
Oh,
All
gee.
right.
I
It could
always
be
look
me.
forward to it.
It was really bad.
So can I just check in with you real quickly about the agenda?
Yep,
Uh,
that's good.
so the only question I had is that the mobile home parks conversation is about the letter, but we don't have the people today, right?
Right. So the people may be in attendance and they could certainly be there to answer questions. They did wonder if they would have time to present, and I just explained to them that, as they submitted this request, it was for you guys to review and then decide whether you wanted to move forward. And if you wanted to move forward, then we would invite them back to another meeting to maybe have another.
Great.
If you have questions, I think they'll be in attendance.
Okay, anything else you want me to know?
I
I'm hearing a lot of noise from someplace. I think it's probably Rich.
Richie, that might be you.
Thank you.
It's always loud,
it's
Rich, loud.
the background noise. I have actually met Cynthia Detman, by the way. Small town, hanging out at the coffee house. Started a conversation with a stranger. We talked for like an hour and a half
All right.
about all sorts of stuff. Yeah, pretty neat. Nice video.
Yeah, I think they're really organized and they really have it together.
Yeah. Anyway, let's see. And I don't know if you want me to say this. I actually went to, back in December, the Medford Rent Burden webinar.
Nice. I'm glad you did. I think I meant to, but then I wasn't able to.
Yeah, so I took some notes. Anyway, if anybody, if you, I'll just let you know about it sometime. I don't think there's any need to put it on an agenda, but
I'm going to put it down here at the bottom, and if we have time, I would love
okay.
to just hear a little.
Yeah, I can at least tell you who was there, and the one piece that's kind of relevant for us because of the social service grant applications was the guy from the Center for Nonprofit Legal Services who was in attendance.
Was it Joe?
It was
Joe?
Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that was actually useful to hear because it was a different perspective than we got from their grant application. So I found that helpful. Anyway, so I did EBJAC on December 14th.
Well, and I wanted to go to see how they structured it and if it was sort of, different than what we had done in the
I don't
past
think
and
it was. It
maybe to
sounded,
co-opt some of their ideas if they were good ones.
yeah, it sounded, they talked about the usual stuff, removing impediments to affordable and fair housing. I just had a note to see Linda's version of this report for Ashland. It was pretty much the same. They did talk about natural affordable housing, which Ashland, I don't think, has as much of as that's like older. units, older houses, older apartments.
Interesting.
Medford's got more of that left over, although there are condition issues, of course, with safe and healthy conditions. Anyway, so lead. Yeah, I took notes.
Rich?
Oh, I just had a little update. I just got off a meeting with So Healthy. I'm on their policy committee, and they each year recommend bills that they support in the legislature. And so we go through and evaluate a whole list. And on there were two bills, but they represent similar kinds of things, two LCs that have been developed around emergency shelter and hot, cold, and smoke. And one of them provides support for cities that are doing that. And the other one, they have pieces about allowing air conditioners for low-income people and an incentive for people to get efficient air conditioning. What are those outside things that we have? What do you call those?
It's the outside unit for a heat pump.
Heat pumps. So that you could get in this, they're sort of also climate change issues, but they really do fit exactly what we've been looking at. And so I think they may likely support those bills, but I know we can't support bills, but I just wanted to let you know that those two things are out there, and they were LCs until today, I think, or something.
What's an LC stand for?
Oh, it's Legislative Council. So there, when the group, when you have a bill, a legislator suggests it to Legislative Council, they write it up as an LC, and then when it gets ready to be introduced, it has a number on it. That comes out a little bit later than the LC. And so you can see what the bill is going to be before it becomes the bill. I guess that would be
cool.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi, guys. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Hi, Linda, Echo. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
So Jackie, are you healed?
You know, I'm doing great. Oh, my gosh. My white blood cells are down, and they're not normal yet, but I still have chronic leukemia, but it's very manageable. Okay. And my hip is great. I'm dancing again.
Yay!
I know. So I am one happy camper. I'm very happy to be alive and doing well. Yes. Awesome. Thank you.
Hi, Chris. Welcome.
Hi, Chris.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Chris.
Hi.
What was that new position that you got that was so good? You got some new thing that you talked about.
Was it the Oregon Trio Association president?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, yeah. We'll be going to Washington in March and talking to our leadership over there about a lot of things. So,
cool. Fantastic. Way to represent.
Thank
you. Congratulations. That's amazing news.
It's a big step. Big step.
Oh, I bet it's one that you are poised to take.
Well, I am certainly ready for it. I'm ready for any opportunity such as this, just to talk to our legislators. Absolutely.
Wonderful.
So Joy may or may not be joining us today. She has had a family emergency. Her father is very ill. Oh. And she herself is still struggling with COVID. She shared today that she also got the latest variant of.
Oh no!
Gosh.
Yeah, so she's still really struggling health wise. So she said that she would join us if she could, but she may not be able to. And I obviously just told her, you know, do whatever she needs to do, and that we will, you know, fill her in later.
Yeah.
And other than that, I haven't heard from anyone else that they wouldn't be here. And then we do have some attendees, and they, I believe that they are members of the committee to protect Ashland's mobile home parks.
Okay, great.
So I can put them on the screen, or they can just stay in attendees until we get to that item, if you want to bring them in or whatever you guys feel. Sometimes it's hard with there's a lot of people on the screen.
Yeah, I would rather it stay with commissioners for now.
Thanks.
And we actually have a quorum, but it's not quite 4 o'clock yet, so we'll just wait a couple more minutes.
Oh, Linda, Linda Reed, I noticed that they had the 3:30 time up on the main site. So when people, you know, because we do a little flash for everyone, we put up the meeting locations. So they had our meeting as 3:30 to 6. I think it was because of the retreat time. But if you can help with that, that'd be great. Once you went into the agenda, of course, you saw that it started at 4, but most people are just looking at the general page, you know, the main page.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. Echo also emailed me about it, and I will have them change that. Thank you. And welcome, Gina, and welcome, Reese.
Yay.
Now Chris will have somebody else he can talk to about SOU stuff.
Yes.
That's great. Do the two of you already know each other, Chris and Reese?
Oh.
Okay. Well.
So my office is here at Stevenson Union on the first floor. It's easy to find me. Trail signage all over the place, so you should be able to find me, no problem. Would love to talk to you, so just stop by.
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny, I just discovered there's a second floor to that building. So it's even easier that it's on the first. So, like, I don't have to go anywhere. That'll save the traffic.
What does TRIO stand for, Chris?
It doesn't necessarily stand for anything. It's the original three programs that was started back in 64, 65 on the higher education movement with all these foundational type of programs to help students.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Looks like Heidi's coming in.
All right. I'm going to go just let my dog back in the house, and then I'll be ready to go.
I have a cat who's snoring on the other side of the screen.
Oh. Oh, there's Kathy Kelly. Yay. Hi, Kathy.
I don't think Kathy ever leaves that chair.
Yeah.
Every time I'm in a meeting with her for anything, she's always in the same chair.
Oh, because this is my office spot.
Yeah.
I don't know where else I would go.
I will say, I have seen her standing with a guitar in her hand.
Oh, good.
And walking up and down Liberty Street. Whew.
Wow.
So I want to pull up the agenda, so I am going to go, but I'm going to come right back so I can see two screens, okay?
Perfect. Yep.
Okay, I'll be right back.
Has anybody heard from Lita recently?
Gina might have, though, when she's here.
Echo, don't you know her?
Yeah, no, we've communicated socially. Not so much about housing issues, but about general questions about the state of the city budget. So I'm not quite sure what her intentions are.
I'm going to reach out to her. It's been a while.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea.
All right, I'm going to call us to order. Welcome. I got to say, good on you for being in front of your Zoom camera when it's 70 degrees outside. Not easy. Real dedication. Thank you. Thank you for showing up. Just before we dive into our meeting, we have an opportunity for a public forum. If there are any of the people who are in attendance that would like to make a comment, here's your moment.
So Linda, are you saying that the attendees, if they wanted to say something?
Don't we have a couple minutes of public forum at the beginning?
Yeah.
Minutes first. She
might read, but that they can only speak to items that are not on the agenda.
Right. The items on the agenda, the people who are, if you're here in relation to the mobile home park conversation, that's on the agenda. And I would like to bring you into the conversation when we get to that far. Anyone else?
No, I think everyone who is here is for the mobile home park conversation. But if I'm incorrect, go ahead and raise your hands and I can unmute you. I'm just letting them know that. It's running these Zoom meetings is kind of weird for me with this many attendees. There's four.
Moving on then, approval of the minutes. Jackie. Unmute.
Sorry about that. I move to approve the minutes.
Echo? Is that a second? Also muted.
Still muted.
It's supposed to work if I just hold the space bar, but it wasn't doing it.
It wasn't doing it.
Anyway, so I had to do it the hard way. I did find a typo on page one for 11:18 minutes under Jackie's paragraph. It says transactional housing instead of transitional.
That's been corrected.
Okay, very good.
That's what I sent out the other day.
Okay, yes. That's as far as I got.
Yes.
Any other corrections, additions?
We just need a second.
Oh, I'll second.
Thanks.
Okay.
Now that I've unmuted.
all those in favor, either raise your actual hand or your virtual hand. Minutes approved. So Linda has been kind enough to give us the upcoming schedule for the community housing, the CDBG grants and the Housing Trust Fund grants, so we can get in the process. And several of you are new to this process. So let me just say that this is a key piece of the work we do every year, is going through the grant applications, reviewing them, talking to the grantees, making decisions. So Linda, would you just kind of walk us through that like we've never been through it before?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. And, you know, I think a couple of years ago, it was asked that I just put this together because it helps us to understand throughout the year the other items that have come up on the commission's agenda, you know, that we don't necessarily have any control over. And so, you know, the main things that we have are the CDBG program, Community Development Block Grant Program, and the Affordable Housing Trust Fund Program. And we issue requests for proposals for both of those grant funds in January. And then we alternate years, or traditionally we have, between the Affordable Housing Trust Fund and the Social Service Grant. So this year it's the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, and theoretically next year would be the Social Service Grant. Although, you know, we're not sure from year to year whether the Social Service Grants will be funded by the Budget Committee. So all that being said, this year we're doing Affordable Housing Trust Funds. And so it lists when the RFPs are issued and then when the proposals are due back. And then usually what happens is that I try to get the proposals to you as quickly as possible. Even if I just email them to you outside of a packet so that you have as much time as possible to read them over in order to make recommendations. And then generally the March meeting it's pretty much dominated by the grant review process and recommendations. And then those recommendations go to the City Council in April. And then the City Council would, make a final award determination. And then from there in May, for CDBG, once the awards are made, there's a document that's drafted called the Annual Action Plan that essentially tells the Department of Housing and Urban Development how we're going to use that funding. And that has to be approved. And it's another opportunity for the public to weigh in on the city's use of these federal funds, because throughout different points in the year, there are multiple opportunities for community members to make comments on, the use of these funds because they're public funds. And then in September, it comes, we get the other end of that process. So in May, the action plan says, this is how we're going to use the funding. We're going to award, whichever organization, and they say they're going to help this many people with this many services. So in September, we have to do another document, which is called the Consolidated Annual Performance Evaluation Report. Sorry, but that's what they call it. And it essentially is the end of the grant year. So it won't be the end of the grant that we made in April and May. It's the end of the previous grant year. So it says, did we do what we set out to do? Did those organizations that we funded a year ago do what they said they were going to do? And so that's essentially what that evaluation report is about. It's evaluating the prior year's grant. And so that is yet another opportunity for the public to weigh in. And so it comes back to you for a public hearing for review and approval before it then gets submitted to HUD. And then in November, the commission has its annual presentation to the council, where it's the commission's opportunity to talk with the council about the goals that you set and the accomplishments that you had and, whatever else is going on. And then we're back to December, which was just around the other corner, where we'll all come together to do goal setting again. So that's the year in review with mostly grant funding and then some other housekeeping stuff. Yes, Jackie.
So I just want to make sure everybody, if you're new, here's this whole schedule and it's all in the packet and it goes down, you look at it going down, but I don't know if you have that to save to put up the screen to share with us, Linda.
Oh,
it's very, I think it would be helpful for people, especially new people, to see the actual calendar.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I've got it in front of me because I print it out, but I'm old school.
I can pull it up on the screen.
I think it would be helpful.
Hold on just a second. Let me open it up here on the screen, and then we can put it up. I think the hard part is that it's just when we talk about all of the, things we want to accomplish and the upcoming, items for the agenda, we just have to keep in mind that we also have these other items that we have to take care of. And they're on our schedule. Let's see here. Let me pull this down. This went to the packet online. And for some reason, I don't know why this housing production strategy stuff is in here. So I am gonna...
It's attached to the minutes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I got you. Thank you. I was like, why is this in here? I didn't put it in here. Just thinking out about it. Okay. All right. Now that I've done this, I think I can share screen. There it is. Okay. Here we go. Can everybody see that? Did it come up for you guys?
Yes.
Okay.
And then showing how CD, how it goes down, you know, you're looking at this in a vertical format.
Right. And that these things are happening. Yeah. In the same. Yeah. Oh, I should have put proposals down in the March. I don't know how I messed that up. Sorry about that. Yeah. So really, March is just a busy meeting, and September isn't bad, but just a couple of other things to keep in mind.
So I would just like to add for new folks in looking at the differences between housing and human, the housing trust fund and CDBG is quite a huge difference. And the biggest difference is in the housing trust fund, we have at least 11 housing uses that are committed. That's very generous in terms of what kind of applications we can look at that helps low-income people in housing. In community development block grant, it's filled with a ton of red tape and different kinds of criteria that you have to meet. So just as we go through those are two big differences. So I would just highlight for people who might want to apply is that the housing trust fund, you should look at those 11 very generous criteria for what we can do and recognize that it's very broad and we can do a lot that generates good for Ashland housing and low-income people.
Great. Okay, I'm going to move on. We ended up doing many more days of severe weather, winter shelter than I think any of us had in mind when it started. So I'm going to invite Linda and also Echo, feel free to join her to give us just a report of what happened with this last episode of emergency severe climate. How do you say it? Severe weather sheltering.
Yeah, I just wanted to go over like some really basic things, but then Echo and Rich and Jason and Vanessa Hauk and Avram Sachs and I all had a debrief meeting. And so I'll let them weigh in on what they heard from that. So essentially, in December, you know, we opened a shelter from the 13th of December through the 25th of December, and then we closed it again. And then it was opened again from the 23rd of December all the way to the 3rd of January. So we had 12 days in a row of emergency cold weather, severe weather shelter, which is more days of shelter than in a row than we have ever had in our history. And not only was it 12 straight days of shelter, it was 24 hours of shelter, which is another thing that we have never really offered. At certain points, we have had shelters because of snow where they were continue to be open, but generally they do close at some point in the day. And then they had a low of 12 occupants and a high of about 35. And I guess what happens generally is that the longer you run a shelter, the more people hear about it and the more people come. In this situation, I guess one of the impacts was that there are some people who are have camps that are up in the hills. And when the snow happened, they were unable to get to their camps in the hills. And so they ended up staying in town. This effort took 8 to 10 volunteers each day. Two people spent the night, and then there were two people at breakfast and two people for dinner, and then two people throughout the day. So they were having 8 to 10 volunteers every single day of those 12 days. Some were the same. I actually never got a tally, and we should ask Avram that, of how many different people. Several people stayed multiple days, including Avram and a couple of other volunteers. The community was very, very generous. There was no lack of food. I think there was a lot of really amazing meals that were provided. There were a lot of other resources as well. I know that the people who couldn't get to their camps had essentially nothing with them, no sleeping bags and no blankets. And so lots of community members brought in a lot of goods. And so that was helpful, but also problematic. At the end, there was a lot of stuff to be removed from the building. And a lot of the volunteer or a lot of the people who stayed were really helpful in helping clean up. So that's kind of the basics of what I know, but I'll turn it over to Echo. And then if Rich has anything he wants to add, just let you talk about what you
want. Yeah, I went back and looked at all of the material that Heidi sent us back in November after seeing what, you know, this was my first sort of up close and personal encounter with cold weather shelters. So when I look back at Heidi's stuff, it made tons of sense. So everything that Heidi knows is still on the checklist. So I'm looking at my tiny little notes here, which I can barely read because I put it out in tiny little font. It made it very clear that we needed clear guidance about activation thresholds, all the stuff that's in the memo that we're going to talk about, how to delegate tasks, assign responsibilities, make sure that that's really understood. We need to figure out what's going on with CERTs and what their role may be for, you know, facilities management, issues with cleaning and various kinds of supplies and organizing food and dealing with facilities for dogs and pets and the laundry and the transportation for getting people to, you know, what may be on the wrong end of town for them. The insurability stuff is still going to be an issue, whatever we end up doing. There was one security problem that Avram experienced. So at our debrief, we had a really good discussion about how that could have been handled better. He's okay, but it was a little scary for him, and he's definitely got tons of experience. The communication piece was my personal interest because I ended up driving around town dropping off flyers and did get Ty O'Meara to do one Nixel alert, but we need to do the communication and outreach stuff way better. Volunteer management training, background checks. This is all sort of done really kind of on Linda's back, unfortunately. And so the policy, the process that we use needs to get much, much better about that. And, you know, and some of the volunteers are not necessarily, the hosts and volunteers are not necessarily comfortable with each other in their orientation to the issue. Around, for example, taking down names and counting and doing sort of the bureaucratic stuff that doesn't always sit well with some of the folks who are hosting and volunteering. So that's my summary of the debrief.
Rich, do you want to chime in?
Well, I would just chime in as we go forward with this, that I saw in the Oregonian that last year, it was something like 116 people died in Oregon because of extreme weather. And in Ashland, we didn't have any. And I just think that we can look at this in a sort of a bureaucratic way, but it's also incredibly life-saving for anybody that thought that they wanted to be out in that without preparation. It was really incredibly harsh. And so just thanks to the incredible amount of people that turned out to make this happen. And if we adopt our recommendations, we will, I think, streamline what has been a kind of, let's all put it together in an ad hoc way. So I'm looking forward to seeing those recommendations go forward.
Well, I'm happy to move on to that agenda item unless somebody has a pressing thing you need to say about it. What happened this time, Jackie?
I just have one question about the two main sites were the Grove and also the Bellevue Grange. Is that right? And I just want to know how those sites worked in terms of restrooms and space.
So the Grove was okay. It does not have a kitchen facility. So it was a little bit challenging. And Echo, you may have a better sense of this than I do. I believe almost everyone pre-made food and brought it there. So there wasn't a lot of cooking requirements. But even for things like making coffee and tea was kind of a challenge. We just had a table and, you know, a plugged in coffee maker. The other thing about the Grove is that it's sort of one big room. And so, you know, it's just a little, I mean, it's easier to watch, I guess. There was one family who came to the shelter, I believe, family with children. And because it was at the Bellevue Grange, which has a lovely large kitchen and two separate rooms and, you know, a good bathroom space that you can see from one room. That's the other thing about the Grove is it has a lot of sort of blind areas that you can't really see if you're being a host in the main room. So the family with children was able to be separated from the group and have a separate sleeping space because there are no background checks there. You know, that's not something that's being done on the fly like that. Luckily, they were able to get that family with children into the Rogue Retreat shelter right away. So we did that very quickly. There were a few, just a few little issues, but I think nothing big at the Grove. An animal went into somebody's office space and went to the bathroom. So that was kind of, and that's, I think, the part about the Grove that's hard is that there's, you know, people have offices there. It's not in the main room, but it's not locked down either. There's, you cannot shut those spaces off necessarily. And then the Grove got broken into later on in the week.
Oh, I didn't.
So that was kind of a bummer. Gina, do you have a question?
I didn't know the Grove got broken into. That's not a good thing. I know that the Grange has the kitchen and the restrooms and the setup there is very accommodating. The Grove, for me, the reason why it came to mind early on was the size of the Grove compared to the Grange. The Grange has two separate rooms, but size-wise, it can't compare. I'm grateful that a very important point that Rich brought up, we didn't have anybody perish in this weather. However, I believe now the Grange is going to open up because I'm looking at all weather shelter and we're getting ready to approach summer. God forbid it's smoke, but it might be heat. And so, and my question is, and I believe it's right, the Grove is going to open up for recreation. Is that correct?
You know, I haven't heard what, I think they have been slowly opening. Their offices are open during the day, and I think they probably will be opening soon for recreation. The Grange has been super generous with us. They give us a very discounted rate considering we do have to rent that facility. But it, like I said, it's very discounted and they actually asked people to move. They had bookings and they asked them to move so that we could, you know, do this, have this there and that it could be continuous and in the same place. That at one point we thought we were going to have to move because there was one booking that did not want to cancel. And it was a bit of a logistical nightmare. How would we get all these people from point A to point B? And so RVTD was super generous and gave us a bunch of bus passes. But luckily we ended up not having to move, but we did use those bus passes to help people leave the Grove when that time was over. So being in that same location at the Grange was super helpful. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the meals were there, the community Christmas meals. So that was really helpful. And Chris, you have something. Do you want to just go ahead?
Can I just say something really quick to put a cap on it? Sure. So it's my understanding that the Grove will be off the table as we approach summer.
Oh, yeah, that part I don't know, because in our recommendations for the council to consider, it is that if there is a booking in a publicly owned facility, that they could potentially cancel that booking in order to accommodate an emergency shelter need.
Okay, I did see. I just wanted to be clear. Sorry, Chris, carry on.
All right, let's move forward into the recommendation. So the intention tonight is to forward a recommendation to the city council. We've been talking about this since the beginning of fall. And I think we're there if we can come to agreement. So do you want to present that, Linda?
Sure. And I don't know how much we want to go over it. Everybody has seen this. So, you know, we had a version of it, and then we had our retreat meeting, and we talked about some final changes we wanted to make to this. And then the actual shelters happened. And then out of that instance, we sort of amended it even further based on the experiences that, you know, from that, those incidents. And so this finished product is sort of what is there. And I think Echo mentioned that she saw some typos. So she's going to get me some information about that. If any of you also have some editorial bits, go ahead and just send that to me. We don't necessarily need to go over it in the meeting. And the piece that I would go to, I guess, I mean, you know, there's, you know, in each policy recommendation, I kind of talk a little bit about how we got there, the discussions we had, the feedback from the stakeholders. The beginning has the council request. So the specific ask that the council had of this group in regards to creating this these policy recommendations. And then I do a quick recommendation overview, which is more, I know Rich had said, I can't remember exactly what you said, Rich, but you said it would be really great if we could make this a short, like a 2-page document. And honestly, I don't think we could have, but I did go ahead and make this brief recommendation overview so that there would be a place where you could just kind of see these things as bullet points. I just felt like it would be beneficial for you guys, and certainly it'll be in a different format when it goes to the council, because the council communication has a different format, but it will essentially, it will retain all this background information. I just felt like it was really important to show how you got there, all the work that you guys put into this, you know, the reviews, the discussions, the stakeholder meetings, the feedback. You didn't come to these conclusions on your own. The other thing I would say is that part of these recommendations really involves other city departments, of which I communicate with not at all. So part of this will be when it goes to the council, it will have implications on other departments and on their budgets and on their staff time and capacity. And so we will have to get feedback from them that will be included in the final council communication when it moves forward. So I just wanted you guys to be aware of that. And I think that's all I have. Jackie?
I think it's, I've given you my few little ideas, and I know you've incorporated them. I think this is very well written. I think it's very important for the council to understand the background information. So I have no problem with the length of the information. I think it's a great idea to have these, the summary, the overview. And my question would be, you have some blank, you know, to be determined spots. So for instance, the threshold for calling an extreme heat shelter should be blank, and or, and then the other one is the threshold for calling a smoke related shelter would be blank and or above. Now, those kinds of things, are you doing that purposefully, that you would leave that open for whoever the council determines would be the overseer, the coordinator, and then the committee, or do we need to decide that?
Well, I think ultimately you guys can decide that, but you know, back in December, I think there was a sense of urgency due to the, you know, weather issues, and because the I think you guys were feeling like we would like this to move forward, it ended up that we ended up choosing to put this stuff off a little. I mean, if you want to, I think it would be more complete to include it in there. I don't know that there's necessarily a process for it to come back to you to get these recommendations in. And while I wouldn't say the urgency of cold weather has passed, it's not quite what it was in December. And so, you know, if you guys wanted to revisit that and we could add those thresholds in either tonight or, you know, at a successive meeting, because I don't think this is going to go necessarily to council, right? I mean, like I said, I have to get some feedback from the other departments. So it might take the month of February. So you could discuss it at a later meeting. I know we had several models in the background material of what those thresholds might be in terms of heat and, you know, what was the other thing? That not just smoke.
Freezing. Yeah, but we put in the 32. My only suggestion would be I'm comfortable with you saying it, leaving out the to be determined and putting in instances where the National Weather Service issues an extreme heat warning. I think if we can depend on, you know, and maybe in the other instance that could work in terms of the smoke, that it would be an extreme for people breathing. But anyway, I would be comfortable with that if that helps get those blanks out.
Okay, other discussion. Echo.
So, Jackie, the details there get very tricky very fast because there's a lot of moving parts to what those trigger points are. So, like, it's been 27 degrees a few nights this week. If we said that the trigger was 32 degrees overnight, we would have tried to stand up a shelter. As the earlier parts of this document makes clear, we don't have the capacity to do everything we would like to do. So whoever is sort of at the top of this pyramid of the team, and whether it's city manager and then the tiers down below that, have to have flexibility.
And I'm comfortable with that, Echo. I'm not talking about the cold.
It's the same thing with the heat. So the deal with the heat, and this is in some of the background research that we did back in the summer, is heat combined with humidity, which in our case is usually quite low, but also overnight temperatures that don't fall below 70 degrees to allow bodies to recover from 105 degrees, for example, during the day. So the rubrics out there that a variety of jurisdictions use are pretty complex, and it's really easy to get so far into the weeds with this discussion that your head explodes.
Well, then you could add on to anything that you have the National Weather Service saying it's extreme in either case, and I'm fine with the 32, but also putting in that the coordinator, the extreme weather shelter coordinator, or their determination that the shelter needs to happen.
So yeah.
I would be fine with leaving it to a point person.
Right. And there are guidelines that person can draw on. Mm-hmm. With the smoke, we can look at AQI, which, you know, we all now do, you know,
right.
We look at all the time now. So like an AQI of 100 is unhealthy for sensitive groups. 150 is unhealthy for everybody. And 200 starts to be, you know, and 250 start to be downright hazardous. Some cities, and I can't remember which ones offhand, maybe Bedford even, doesn't trigger a smoke-related shelter until it's over 250. Mm. Which and that's relentless, 24 hours a day. The smoke is always there.
Wow.
And, you know, so that seems really too high.
Yeah.
But figuring out exactly what that number should be, it's really, they're just, the details are staggering.
I think that's why you've got to leave it to a point person.
Exactly. And that person needs to be informed.
Yeah.
they really need to have read some of the documents and gotten into the weeds so that it's, so that they're not just relying on a set of arbitrary numbers to make that decision. It requires an informed judgment call.
Yep. Okay. I saw a hand earlier from Rich and now Heidi. And is that you too, Gina? Okay. 1, 2, 3. Rich first. Well,
I was agreeing with Jackie's first recommendation. And because it can get into the weeds, I don't think we want to have something to the council that says to be determined later, or we're not quite sure what it is. I think we need to give them a clear explanation of what we're doing. And I think we need to do it today. And so the 32, everybody we heard of, everybody we talked to, there was no one that, looking at our current situation of 20 degrees, think that's okay under any circumstances. So the question of where you put it, I think 32 is one that common sense and a lot of people could say, yes, it's the freezing level. And if you put that in, then that's the kickoff that we have for that. For the heat and the smoke, I think there is an ability to, I like the, what about the, using the National Weather Service's emergency warnings has been what a lot of groups have been doing. So my hope would be that today we can fill in those blanks. And when we go to the city council, they obviously, they can go anywhere they want. But in doing it, they'll be in the weeds. And I don't think they want to be. I think they sent it to us to come up with something that was certain. So anyway, that's what I hope we do today.
Great. Thank you, Rich. Heidi.
When I was in charge of doing all this, there was a lot of conversation between myself and the city manager. I was always advocating for the unhoused, and he or she was advocating for what community buildings were available. And so you have to take a lot of things into consideration, like wind chill factor and how long it's cold. And so absolute numbers don't really work incredibly well. But having some flexibility for the city manager and the point person, whoever that will be, to discuss it, is really helpful. And I don't know how you write that into policy unless you have sort of set temperatures, with a caveat depending on wind chill, rain, things like that.
Gina.
Thank you. I will just say quickly that I agree with Rich and Heidi. I believe council wants to have a definite number so that it gives them something to work from. And that person working with the city manager, you can finesse it. So if you have a direct number, and so that people can work left or right, but you have to start from somewhere. So I agree that the blanks need to be filled in today. And we don't have that point person yet, but when we do, that's where the flexibility comes in. And my dealing with Mr. Lazard, one of the questions when we interviewed him, one of my questions was housing first, housing for all. And he lit up and he jumped on board. So
yay.
I think we have a friend in Joe.
Okay, before I recognize you, Echo, I just want to see anyone who hasn't spoken on this subject. Okay, Echo and then Linda.
Linda, when you're ready for numbers, I'll give them to you. Just let me know.
I can alter that so we can say thresholds for calling a shelter. I should either add a bullet or just give the caveat. Shelters can only be opened if there are enough volunteers and a location. And then I would also add the city manager and the shelter coordinator will have the flexibility to determine if a shelter needs to open outside of these thresholds.
Yes.
Okay.
Great. Okay, we're ready for some numbers from
okay. So Rich and I and Joy had and Linda had lots of conversations about numbers back 6 months ago. So this is a reflection of those conversations from starting back in July. So for cold weather, 32 degrees, not a bad number to pick, certainly better than 20. And then a city manager or whoever sort of starts the conversation would take into account wind chill and precipitation and number of days duration. But that would be the flexibility piece of the puzzle. For extreme heat, Joy's not here, but I can tell you that her preference would be 95 degrees. And maybe 100. Yeah, that it's a little harder to tell because we're a drier climate. So Washington, D.C. triggers their heat shelters at 95 degrees because they have humidity. For us, 95 would certainly be better from a homeless person's perspective, but maybe 100 is okay because we're likely to have 15% humidity. Discussion on that point, I think, would be helpful.
Can I jump in on that really quick, Echo? So, you know, one of the city's policies in which you guys, you know, just to have you be aware is, you know, the Parks Department has a guide about how to stay cool in the summer. And part of their guide is a map and a list of all the water parks and then all the places where you can go swimming or be wet in the city and also like shady areas that are covered. And so, I mean, in thinking about the temperature thresholds, like, because I think the other piece of this that is important to remember is that it also is a shelter for people who don't have air conditioning in their homes.
Yes. Correct.
So it's not just people who are just going to be exposed to the outside all the time.
Right.
Well, that's a good point, Reese.
Right.
And I don't know that we really looked at that.
Yeah. Well, and people who are unhoused adults or seniors without air conditioning.
Yeah.
They're not going to be going to the water park. Probably shouldn't be around small kids. In some cases, not an appropriate place for senior citizens with fall and trip hazards. So this for you know. So this is where it gets weedy really quick. So I don't want to go there too much. 95 to 100 degrees, and I would add high minimum overnight temperatures on top of that high daytime heat. Because that's the public health issue with heat. The body doesn't get a chance to cool down at night.
Yeah.
Now there are some really fancy tables that some jurisdictions use to figure this stuff out, but they're kind of overwhelming. And then
can you also give us the smoke numbers?
I was about to do that.
Okay, sorry.
I think a smoke number of 150 is realistic because that's where it becomes really unhealthy. I think it starts to be unhealthy for everybody. There's actually a table someplace that I could look up to be more precise, but I don't want to take the time to hunt for it right now. I think it's 150, Linda, where it's unhealthy for everybody. Is my memory right?
I think you're right. I think is it unhealthy for everybody or unhealthy for sensitive?
That's what I can't remember without digging, without turning on.
Purple. Isn't 200 purple? And then like.
I don't want to take time to look for it, but I would pick the number that's unhealthy for everybody.
Okay.
Whatever that number is.
Okay. Yeah. So Echo's offering us that as a number. And then.
And I'll look for it while you guys talk. I know I've got it. I just don't want to take time to look for it too much.
So what I have for the extreme heat, I just wrote down 95 to 100, depending upon other factors such as humidity, UV index, and overnight lows. How does that work for everyone? It tries to cover all the bases.
Right. Any other discussion?
Everyone's okay. Good with unhealthy for the smoke, unhealthy for everyone?
Yes. I think I'm getting nods around the table for that. Okay. But I would like some discussion about 95 versus 100.
So I wrote between 95 and 100 because in that 5 degrees, the difference would be if it's 95, but it's very humid or the UV index is high or the overnight lows are going to be, you know, too high, or 100 if, you know, it's not humid and the UV, does that make sense? How do you guys feel about that? Or would you rather land on a more pure number?
No, that's good.
Okay. Oh, Heidi?
To me, it would also depend on what facilities are open during the day. So if it's 95 to 100 and you can sit in the library until 6 p.m. and it starts to cool down, that's different than a shelter because it's over 100 or over and doesn't cool down. So those are the kind of, you know, what's available for the community when it's 95 degrees versus 105. It's really a different scenario. And if we're talking about emergency shelters, that I would tend to go for a higher number to enact an emergency shelter, but I would also talk about letting people know where they can go to cool off.
The purpose of our whole recommendations is to also say that we're going to have pre-approved, pre-organized, pre-trained people both for winter and summer shelters. And so we won't be like in the past where we just, oh my God, we got to do it. Where do we go? We have heard from some of the kind of like the library and SOU, if it's a little bit easier during the daytime to do that. It doesn't require the same amount of volunteers and stuff to always be there. So I'm happy with the 95 to 100 and recognize that as we do this, we're going to have an ongoing need to keep these groups organized ahead of time on any one of them. So
I think we're really close to something that could look like a motion. Somebody want to give it a try? Jackie?
I move to approve the severe climate event policy recommendation with the changes that we have just made in our commission meeting tonight.
I'll second it.
Okay. So Liz, what's the motion you've got?
Sorry. Move to approve severe weather shelter recommendations or event. I didn't get all that.
So move to approve the severe climate event policy recommendation.
With changes made in meeting tonight.
Yes.
Okay. And Rich seconded that? Any more discussion? All those in favor, raise your real or your virtual hand. Opposed? We did it. Yay. This is kind of a milestone. We've been working on this for months. So
yes.
Really.
Wonderful.
Congratulations to all of us. A special thanks to Echo and Joy and Linda, Rich, the people who've been working on this so hard for so long.
Thank you so much.
And from what Linda said earlier, it may be another month before it goes to the council. Because there's, you know, we just got to get everybody that's going to be impacted needs to say yes to it. I feel like, you know, it's time to go. Woo-hoo! Yay. Woohoo. Good job. And we're still kind of on schedule. How about that?
I had one more question. If we have some grammatical errors and just word additions. Would you like us to get that to Echo first or to Linda, or how do we do that?
Why don't you send them to me, and then I'm going to do a track changes okay. proofreading job
okay.
On it and send that to Linda. And that way she's only getting like one email rather than several.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
Awesome. Whew, moving on. We agreed in our December retreat to come back to this meeting before adopting our strategic initiatives for 2022. So that's the next thing on the agenda. And I believe that's you again, Linda.
Yeah, so at the retreat, we had a lot of discussion and then we got a little derailed by the shelter. So, yeah, I think I'm not sure. I guess that's my way of saying I am not entirely sure that I captured everything that we discussed. So if there's anything in here that was, you know, near and dear to your heart that I did not capture, or did not include, please do let me know and I will add it. However, this is what I captured from what we talked about, was that there were fewer priorities to focus on, I felt like, and that these were generally the ones that we felt like we could make some headway on. So let me know your thoughts. Jackie?
One of the concerns that I have and that many of the other commissions have is the environmental challenges ahead of us and trying to reduce our carbon footprint. And I noticed that's not on the list, but of course in workforce housing, when we're talking about that, one of the primary challenges would be to look at changing how housing has their heating and appliances from natural gas to electrification. I think that's a really key area that to be looking at right now. So I guess I would really like to at least see that within the workforce housing. And then of course I would really like to see all the commissions looking at not just, you know, the equity and including equity, but looking at environmental. It's sort of like the triple bottom line that Eugene is using. So I'm hoping that anytime we're looking at a project, that we're also considering the environmental challenges, because we gotta get together and start focusing on that. I think it's really important.
Mm-hmm. Kathy.
Yeah, I would echo what Jackie says regarding water capacity for all new builds. It's a big concern for me, seeing how low all of our reservoirs are. Yeah. And in particular, you know, adding that to the mobile home capacity, you know, capacity for more mobile home parks to really look at the water issue.
One of the things we talked about was a commercial kitchen. And I do think that that's a very important role for what we're trying to do here in the community with our shelter situation. So again, there, I would want to look at electrification rather than natural gas, for instance. And so I would want to look at the environmental impact when we're doing something like that.
Gina.
So I have a question. Jackie, are you talking about new builds or what, new buildings, new affordable housing, or what's already here?
Well, both. I mean, absolutely both. So we have this cross communication going on between commissions right now. And, you know, one of the things we're talking about is how could we get all of the restaurants in Ashland to decide to move over, you know, to an electrification instead of natural gas for their ovens, for their kitchens. in terms of helping the environment. And of course, that's looking at what we've got right now. Mm-hmm. And in other parts, for instance, New York right now, they're changing over all, well, trying to change over all the heat pumps, the heating and cooling to 2,400 housing authority apartments. And they're doing a competition to see what manufacturer can come up with an electric heating and cooling system that could fit into the windows to transform all of those and then give the business 2,400 apartments to them if they could come up with a solution. So I think we should be looking at both what we've got now and what we're putting into the future.
Because I just wanted to say, looking in the future, I see that being a lot more attainable.
Yeah.
Where we are right now with what we have. I just saw something pop up on the chat. If it's not well incentivized, it's going to be difficult because it all boils down to the cost.
Absolutely. And one of our challenges is showing the community how, yes, it can cost more upfront at the beginning to do these things, but in the long run, how we can save money. So it's not only saving lives, it's saving money. So that has to be part of the conversation. Absolutely.
Echo.
Two quick things. Under workforce housing, can we say something about we want to sort of work with or talk to or encourage, support, cheerlead for this, cheerleading is probably better for the city council's work in 2022 on the housing production strategy, because that is where the rubber is going to meet the road.
Yep.
For the coming years. And then we also had a good discussion at the retreat, I thought, about trying to do a better PR, public communication, social media use about our successes with all of these issues around housing and food and the emergency shelter. And that's an issue for a lot of things in the city, not just what we do. But we need to tell our story much better. And we had a good discussion about that at the retreat.
Jackie.
I am meeting with this group of different commissions. So they're representatives from all the other city commissions. We get together once a month. And at our latest meeting, we talked about how difficult it is for the community to understand exactly what you were just saying, Echo. What are we working on simply, in simple language? What are we working on in the individual commissions? And what are the successes? What are the things that we're accomplishing? And so we had a representative from our group, Lori Kaplan, send an email to Bert Etling at ashland.news, which is our local, our new local paper. And he was thrilled about the idea to do something like a commission corner where maybe once a month or once every quarter, all the commissions would just give a small communication about what we're working on and what's working well. So I want to mention that because I would like to get your thoughts on that concept. And it seems to me it fits with what you're saying, Echo.
Yeah, no, I love that idea.
Okay, I want to bring us back to adopting our goals. So there have been some suggestions for things to add into this document. Any discussion around those specific additions? Are we ready for a motion?
I need to know what it looks like. I know, Linda, you're taking notes, but what does the list look like now?
Okay, let me just check in on Chris first. Chris, did you want to say something?
I just wanted to add that wasn't it part of our discussion also to also table events such as RANT and those forums that we're having, those back and forth dialogue with the community as well?
Great.
Is that under What goal was that under?
Sorry.
Well, when's the annual date for that rent burden?
So we have to, traditionally we do it in November. We have to do it before the end of the year, but we can do it at any time. And I think as part of the HPS process, we're going to work that in because it's part of getting some feedback. So I think we are going to see if we could do it earlier in this year and then do it in conjunction with the HPS process. Housing, yes, HPS.
And whenever we get to have that rent burden event, which maybe can be with real people again, that's one of those places where SOU students, faculty, staff, I hope really be encouraged to participate in that discussion because that affects those folks deeply.
Maybe we should have it at SOU. We have had events at SOU in the past, and that really helped bring students to the table.
Yeah, if we can do something outdoors out in front of the SU, for example, like a listening table around housing issues, that I think that would be awesome.
Back to the motion. So, Linda, have you captured the things that have been given so far? And Heidi, do you want to add to that, Heidi, or you want to hear hers?
Yeah, I just think we should put into our work for the year that we do the CDBG grants and the Affordable Housing Trust Fund allocations. They take a tremendous amount of work. They take at least two of our meetings a year, sometimes more. And I think that's just part of the usual work we do every year. Yeah. And it should be recognized because commissioners need to know that those are big time consuming events.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you for mentioning that, Heidi. Yeah. And it's also, I think, you know, it's a hard part of being a commissioner, of making those decisions. And thank you for bringing that up. Okay, so here's what I have to add to under workforce housing, environmental challenges, changing from natural gas to electrification, exploring incentives, and looking at the environmental impact on housing, such as through a triple bottom line review, and also looking at the impact on water resources of new developments.
Okay, great.
So, capture that. And then I have added, not under, I guess I need to add a new topic heading, do a better job of PR around the work that the city is doing, what we're working on in commissions and what commissions have accomplished. And then the CDBG and Affordable Housing Trust Fund allocation. And then still under workforce housing, moving the HPS process through to council, and then a listening session and tabling sessions around rent burden holding events. And then I think that's everything.
Well, you had food resources on the original list.
Yeah, and under there, I just have environmental impact, address the need for a commercial kitchen in Ashland and review the environmental impact. And I would also add about the PR thing. I love what you are talking about, Jackie. And a long time ago, well, not that long ago, during the pandemic, through the budget committee process, each department had to make a little video to talk about what they were doing. Did you ever see that? Did you guys see that? So I made one. Brandon and I made one together via Zoom, believe it or not. and we all only had like a very, very small amount of time to work with. And so it was like, have your PowerPoint presentation, do your Zoom, you know, you talking, and like get through all your stuff really, really fast. And so there's one for every department. Wow. It exists in the world. So I don't know if those could be recycled somehow to provide community education about, like, a brief overview about what people are doing.
Nice. I think that I'll bring that back to the cross communication commission meetings and see what they say. Good idea.
And I could talk with Brandon about where those are held. I mean, I know he has hours because he had to edit it and do all that for him and I. But I don't know where the other ones are.
Okay.
Okay. Can we put a motion on the table?
Okay. Somebody else. Come on, guys.
Let's see. I move acceptance, approval of our priorities and goals for 2022 as discussed at this meeting.
Second.
Chris and Jackie are seconding. Seconding and 30.
Give it to Chris.
Any more discussion? So all that we've added tonight is refinement. It doesn't substantially change any of the goals from our retreat, but it adds some refinement and some further explanation, I think. Ready to vote?
Sure.
All those in favor? Opposed? Passes. Yay. Thank you. Yeah, we're moving. We're getting stuff done.
Yay. Good job, Linda.
Good job, everybody. So the next thing on our agenda is we have a letter from the Committee to Protect Ashland's Mobile Home Parks. And that letter was actually very informative, mm-hmm. along with a video to explain it. Really, we could just discuss the letter, but because I believe that there are people from the committee who are in the Zoom room, we could also open up and have them really make a presentation to us. We have the time to do that. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
And we're not required to make any decisions tonight. We can, you know, take it up at our next meeting if need be. But this is a great opportunity for us to really hear from them. And after we've had a chance to read the letter, probably have some great discussion. So, Linda, can you bring them into the room?
Yeah, so all of you who are currently attendees, I'm going to move you over and it'll ask you to, I think, select an option, and then it will cut out for a second and then you'll just be brought into the room. So I'm doing that now. It just takes a little bit, so you may get a prompt.
Alan, hi. I know you.
Hi there.
Cynthia, hi. Is there anybody else I'm missing here?
I think so.
Some folks haven't started their video.
Right.
There's just a couple more. You think Barbara and Helga. I mean,
Dolores?
You don't have to come in if you don't want to either, but I am giving you that ability if you want to use it. But if you don't, that's totally fine too. So I just don't want you to feel like you can't come in.
Okay. So I think the best place to start would be whichever of you would like to just make a little short presentation, kind of the high points of what you've already given us or anything you want to add to that, and then open it up for discussion. Does that work?
Well, I'm happy to play that role. I'm Cynthia Detman. I live at Wingspread Mobile Home Park. And we actually started a conversation here several years ago about becoming a cooperative. And we've done a lot of research on that, but we haven't really pursued that idea because we understand that the owners of our park are not at all interested in selling to us. And we're not sure we can afford it. We have a lot of low-income people in our community, and we're not sure we can afford the increased membership fee that we would have to pay to pull it off. But in that process, we found out that Portland in 2018 had passed an ordinance, actually an emergency ordinance, to protect 56 out of their 57 mobile home parks. And there wasn't a tremendous amount of opposition from the park owners. It passed in 2018. And the Portland's ordinance basically creates a brand new zone called a mobile home park zone. And what that does, it doesn't prevent an owner from ever closing a park, but it does make it more difficult to close a park because the owner would have to go back and get another zoning change and persuade, in the case of Portland, their city council that the city's housing goals would be better served by closing the mobile home park and creating some other kind of housing. So the Portland ordinance also has a variety of incentives. Whether those incentives are happening, I don't know a lot about the effect of those, but they built in some incentives to offer to the owners that would help them actually get some money to work on infrastructure. Our mobile home parks are aging and they're not all in great condition. So there's three parks in within the city of Ashland. There's several on the edges and the urban growth boundary, but my understanding is that the city doesn't have any power to change the zoning there, but does have the power to look at the zoning within the city. There's three parks, the Pines, which is probably the most low income of our parks, located at Ashland Avenue, and I'm forgetting the name of the street.
Walker,
yeah. It's probably the oldest park. It has a lot of RVs in it that are homes. And then there's Wingspread, which is the largest one, 116 homes, a mix of larger homes in pretty good shape and some smaller homes that have low-income residents who haven't been able to maintain them as well. This park is around 60 years old-ish. Tolman Creek is younger. Tolman Creek Mobile Home Park has, I believe, 38 residents. We have representatives from both Wingspread and the Pines in our little committee. And what we would like the commission to look at is, do you have ideas for us on how we might proceed? We have no idea whether the owners of our parks, my understanding is that the Pines is owned by one owner, and then Wingspread, it's a family, and Tolman Creek Park is owned, I believe, by two different couples. The owners are aging, but we don't know what's going on in their hearts and minds as far as our futures, but we feel very vulnerable. A number of years ago, a small mobile home park did close on Ashland Avenue, and there was nothing that those residents could do. So 10 households lost their investment, lost their homes, and Ashland lost 10 units of affordable housing. And there really wasn't anything that could be done. We're somewhat protected in terms of we get to have a year's notice if a park closes, and we get a small stipend, basically, depending on the size of our home, to get out. But by the end of that year, we need to be out. And we can't sell our homes. Nobody wants a used mobile home. There's no place to take them. They're very expensive to move. So they're really not as mobile as mobile home sounds. So we've brought this issue to you to get your feedback. What are your suggestions? How might we bring this to the council? Should we be approaching the Planning Commission? We know it would be a lot of work for the planning department to have to do this. We do know that there's a planner at the city of Portland who still works there, I think, who led this effort and did a lot of the work and is available to help the City of Ashland Planning Department develop such a proposal. But that we're sort of, we're at the mercy of the owners, and we are looking for some solutions looking ahead. We don't want to wait until there's a crisis when one of the owners decides to close a park and we have no remedy. So that's kind of where we're at, and we'd love to get your thoughts and feedback.
Okay, I'm going to have to scroll between several screens to see people, so just raise your hand and be patient. But Kathy.
Hi there. My name's Kathy, and I was a part-time manager of the Bear Creek Mobile Home Park for 3 years, and I was a resident until my home burned in the Alameda fire. I think, Dolores, I think you and I spoke.
Yes.
Hi. Hi. Yeah, a couple of years ago. I really appreciate your mentorship around tenants associations for mobile home park residents. I'm just like bursting with excitement that you're here. I'm just thrilled because, I mean, I'll tell you all a secret. The reason I joined the commission, and I am a new member, I admit that, learning a lot, but I have a desire to really help with mobile home tenant advocacy for all of the mobile home parks in the entire Rogue Valley, including the 17 ones that burned, that are really struggling with rebuilding and advocacy. Yeah. So I don't want to bogart this conversation to the entire Rogue Valley, which is definitely my overall mission, but I'm highly in support of this venture for Ashland specific. It sounds like you're looking to pass an ordinance that would be Ashland specific.
Yeah.
But I'm also really curious to hear if you are open to collaboration with fire survivor mobile home parks in the wider
we've
valley.
We've talked about Jackson County because the majority of mobile home parks are in the county, not in cities. It seems kind of daunting to be trying to convince the Jackson County Commission to protect mobile home parks and affect the property rights of all these owners. But yeah, I think collaboration is a great idea. And I'm not sure about Medford. There's lots of, Medford has jurisdiction over many mobile home parks. And I know, by the way, you probably know this, Kathy, Talent did pass an emergency ordinance after the fire that ensures that the mobile home parks that burned have to be maintained as mobile home parks, but
right. Phoenix did as well.
The problem is they're bringing in brand new double wide homes, which many of the residents that used to live there can't afford. But at least they're maintaining a stock of mobile home parks, which are more affordable than buying a single family home. So we do have that local precedence to protect parks in Talent.
Absolutely. Well, the other thing I wanted to share before turning it over to the more experienced commissioners around, you know, getting this proposal moving forward in Ashland is that we do have a lot of information about the mobile home subordinate loan program, which helps with upgrading older units. That is a program we have been connecting a lot of fire survivor mobile home owners with in order to purchase a new unit, because the gap between a low insurance payout and the cost of a new home is so high.
Yeah.
But that loan, the original form of that loan that Pam Marsh passed, is still applicable for current mobile home owners who want to upgrade their unit. And so I'm happy to chat with you about that offline.
Great.
And I'll put my contact info in the chat.
Okay, great. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Okay, other discussion? Please raise your hand so I can track who's where talking about what. Echo.
So Kathy and I work together on other stuff as part of the organization called Zone Captains. And so I learn a lot from Kathy all the time. Access is the community action agency for Jackson County. And they have lots of housing programs of many kinds for many kinds of housing. So working on getting more informed about what Access does is something that those of you living in the parks, I think, could definitely benefit from.
Thank you.
There's a lot there, and it gets really overwhelming, actually. But Access is a good place to start. Melanie Dozier is the person that seems to kind of know the most. And so both Kathy and I can help you with those contacts.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Echo.
Rich, did you have your hand up?
I did. And I guess I have a long history and passion for this issue. And I would just say, one is it hits a number of goals that we have in our commission. One is obviously the preservation of affordable housing, but also if you look at the issue of racial justice, it fits completely within that goal of having inclusive housing. And if you look at how we zone, which we don't exactly zone so much on our commission, but we do make recommendations about how the city uses zoning for more inclusive communities. So all of that fits us directly. So I guess my recommendation would be that we form a work group, and I would be part of it, and Kathy, I hope she would, and then others might want to, and we can clearly involve people in the community in our work groups. And if we schedule carefully, we can, I think we can move this forward. And I guess the last thing, I think now is the time, because of the fires, mobile parks have moved up in people's minds about what's needed. And so I think to wait is to lose the opportunity. So that would be my suggestion, that we form a work group today and then see how we can move that forward.
Thanks, Rich.
Dolores.
Yeah. No, I just was commending Rich for an excellent idea.
Could I ask whoever is having background noise to please mute when you're not talking? Thank you. I'm looking for other hands. Gina.
Thank you. Thank you. And Rich, I like how you said, let's form it and do it today. I love that proactiveness. And also, I would like to thank everyone for coming with the presentation. To be proactive, like you said, Cynthia, you don't want to wait until the last minute or to the 11th hour.
Wow.
Something that I thought about, you mentioned a person in Portland
who
implemented this. And because this body is going to create kind of a subcommittee to carry the ball and look into this for you, I would definitely suggest reaching out to what's already put in place in Portland and see how we can use it here in Ashland. I would wholeheartedly support this for council because part of our mission is workforce and affordable housing. So whomever, oh, thank you, very good. Kathy, you're all over it. So with all of your connections, so to be able to reach out to the individual and do all your homework ahead of time. And I just commend you. And I thank you for coming forward with this because I didn't know that Portland had put this in order. It put this in place.
So thank what's you. Not clear to me is in creating a work group. Is this a work group of housing commissioners working with this whole committee? Is that what you're suggesting, Rich?
Yes, I think it's those that volunteer from the housing commission with those that might volunteer from the whole committee doesn't have to do it, but there will be some, I think, that would join in that work group, and then together we would put forth some recommendations, much like we did with the extreme weather issue.
Okay, is there general agreement, commissioners, that this is the direction you want to go, move forward? I don't think this requires a motion. I think we can just name it. And what we have so far is Rich and Kathy. Anybody else feeling passionate about this, want to jump in and be part of this work group?
I'm passionate, but Kathy knows way more than anybody else.
It's true.
we'd love to have you.
I'm trying to like be a little careful with my time commitments these days.
I understand.
So I'm gonna defer to somebody whose expertise is very, very deep.
Okay, I'm perfectly happy to have it be Rich and Kathy. Those are two people who are informed and passionate and a great connection here. And I would just suggest that that when you meet together, that you kind of outline what the scope of work looks like and what you think might be places where you want to report back to the commission or for feedback or for decisions, and come back to us if you can next month with some idea of like what you see your work being. And, you know, so rather than try to define that, why don't we let you guys meet together and define that?
I think Linda did a good job of coordinating us with the emergency weather, and I hope she can also. It wouldn't take enough. We don't want to put too much time, but I think a little coordination would really help.
Absolutely. So I think what I'm hearing here is really this is a topic that is very warmly received on this commission. Your letter, the work you're already doing, is fully embraced. And there've been conversations on this commission, also the work that Representative Marsh has been doing along with it. I think the timing is great. And I just want to say, I so appreciate the quality of your presentation, both what you sent to us in advance and today. Like, I'm just like kind of going, yay, yay, yay. This is great.
Thank you. So
thank you. Thank you very much. Mm.
So shall we wait to hear from Rich or Linda as far as how to constitute our membership in the work group?
For you guys to schedule a meeting. And Cynthia, I don't know if you just want to go ahead and email me who from your group might want to be involved.
Okay.
Thank you, Linda.
Okay, I can do that. Yeah. And am I right that we'll be able to meet on Zoom? Because we have a couple Latina members who are younger and working, and we want to make sure that and one's in Beaverton, and so we want to make sure we can accommodate working people.
Great.
Okay.
Heidi.
Linda, I had a question. Didn't we have some either CDBG funds or Housing Trust Fund money that was from, who was it, Habitat, who is going to work on renovating older mobile homes, and they had to back out because they couldn't find enough people willing to allow them to use that grant?
So yes and no. Yes, we did. Habitat had a grant, and it was for a home repair program that they had, and that they could do mobile homes. But I'm trying to think, they only really did, I don't think they ever did insides of mobile homes. I feel like they did a lot of porches. And then, yeah, they had a certain amount of time to spend the grant. And at some point they just didn't have any more people who were applying at the time.
Maybe post fire, there would be more people that would be interested in the existing, as Cynthia mentioned, a lot of the homes are aging, and
yes,
some repair. Maybe that would be a good organization to contact again, and let them know that there may be people interested in some renovations.
And that we will contact them.
Yeah.
And thank you.
Give you that contact information too. Thanks for bringing that up, Heidi. I forgot about that.
And wouldn't there also be Housing Trust Fund monies available for potentially to defray some of the costs of purchasing a mobile home park?
Yes, absolutely. Someone could apply for Affordable Housing Trust Funds for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
you
would actually be eligible for the acquisition of a mobile home park. And for infrastructure in certain circumstances.
This is going to get good.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the warm reception. We appreciate it.
Yeah, we sure do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're near the end of our meeting, but we do have a time to actually do our liaison reports, which we've run out of time several times on. And I want to start with you, Chris, because you seem to get cut off the most often.
Well, thank you, Linda. That's mighty nice, generous of you. I think the only thing I've got to report so far is that we do have a new president here, as you may have heard, President Rick Bailey. I've had some opportunity to speak, but once we kind of get him transitioned, I hope to have more meetings with Rick as well. So that's really all I have to report right now. Maybe Reese might have more.
Reese?
I have a couple things, and I think I haven't been here for like a month, at least since the last meeting, but in the meantime, I've been talking with a lot of other students, and I've got a little bit of feedback. A couple of them even looked at that 140-page report that was sent out. Yeah, that was a doozy, but I noticed a couple things, and I won't take too long to go over it, but just maybe it's worth bringing up from what I've noticed. A lot of people my age are struggling to find affordable single-family units to rent. And so, of course, there's the dorms, but it's unclear how many of the students living in the dorms are having that being paid for from their parents. You know, a lot of these kids are wanting independence from that. And it always seems that there's a long line if people even find a place to live. And so I know that the fires and everything have displaced a lot of people. So everything's just short on housing. But the one thing, like, it's a slight contradiction with what we were reading is it seems like there's this assumption that the single unit family homes are for nuclear families when we might want to consider that these are found families. So it might not be like two parents, two kids and a pet, but more like four or five college students. So appealing to those people would result in, you know, maybe a different outcome. And then again, obviously, there's like a disproportionate amount of older people in the city of Ashland. And I can acknowledge that, like, obviously, as college students, it's a very transitional time in our lives. We're not all going to be here for very long. But at the same time, there is a degree of money coming in from the college students that are working here or paying rent. And it doesn't feel like they're being represented in those calculations. So it just feels a little bit fishy, you know what I mean? And I know there's only so much that the commission can control, but right now a lot of people are just looking for places to live that they can afford. I think they said anything more than 600 is what they're seeing. They'd like it to be a little bit less than that. Yes, so that's what I got for that. Other than that, for looking at solutions, I don't know a lot about this, but I was wondering if at the farm that the school runs, if any of the food grown from that could be used for these homeless shelters. Also in that same vein, right now my research methods class is doing a literature review about food deserts and food insecurity for this area. And so if that would interest the commission, once that is assembled, I'd be happy to share that with everyone. I think it would be really interesting. And then I think earlier it was mentioned about incentivizing a lot of these motions, like with the electricity, but also for volunteers, just from what I'm seeing, we as college students, we don't have a lot of time to spare without some sort of incentive. A lot of these people are trying to work and do school. So if you needed volunteers for things, it would be best if the incentive was practicum, like why I'm here. I just happen to be really lucky to get this position, and I'm very grateful. So maybe like with definitely the sociology majors like myself, but maybe even the communications or what have you, I know a lot of people would be eager to receive that credit, and you'd also be getting the physical help you need, especially in those homeless shelters. It just depends like which area you guys are looking for that. So that's pretty much what I've got for that.
Thank you, Reese. We have not actually formally welcomed you into this commission, but from what you just said, it's a big yay on our part. And I don't know if you saw the smiles around the group, but let's just give her a little yay.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
It's been a long time since we had a student representative, and you're awesome.
Thank you.
Gina, there you are.
Good. That was good. Yes, welcome, Reese. So something that I just wanted to put out there, And this commission, it'll go out to other bodies because we really want to have engagement from the community, is that the end of spring, probably beginning of summer, the city of Ashland is going to put out a survey. This survey is going to be based on the general fund. And that means police, fire, parks, administration, and community development, and how that impacts your budget, your pocketbook. So what we have done is today we had our first meeting, and we are going to be working with SOU to put out a survey. You will get it'll be a mailed survey, and it'll be online survey also, so that it's an opportunity for the community to use your voice and say yes or no. It's going to look very similar to a ballot, meaning it will say, if you vote this way, this is what yes looks like. This is what no looks like. And there'll also be links that will be a part of that for those who want to take a deeper research look to be able to make that informed opinion. So we're going to put a lot of effort into it. We started today. I thought it was going to be an hour meeting. It was a 3-hour meeting, but it was well done. We covered a lot of bases, and then we're going to go to SOU to compile this and put it together and go back to council. Please keep your eyes open. Please take a minute, and really, we want to hear from you. That is the purpose for spending this almost $40,000 on this survey. But I say it's money well spent if we get your input. If we only hear from 200 people and we have 21,000 plus people, then what's it all about? So right. Please, and I'm going to go to all the commissions, and I'm going to tell all the commissioners, I'm going to shout from the mountaintop. I'll see you in the week spread. I'll be right over.
Okay.
Because we need your input. So yes. More to shall be revealed.
I am so grateful that you're a liaison.
I am so grateful. I can't say enough. Something else that I wanted to say too is that I wanted to thank Heidi for Heidi's holding on to her information about what you did when you were the head person in charge of the shelters. Because I think without that past history, we would have had to start from scratch. I appreciate that. And yes. I really appreciate that. And I appreciate what was brought up earlier is the good news. You know, you look at social media, you open up the newspapers, all, you know, the sky is falling. We need to put out the good news. That's why we went over to Snowberry too, for the good news. Columbia Care is opening up pretty soon. The good news, to let people know this is what we're doing. Ashland, we got you, because so many people in Ashland feel very vulnerable, and that's not our purpose. So anyway, okay, so I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you. Linda Reed, undoubtedly the best staff person any commission's got. Crazy about you.
Thank you. That's so kind. But how many other commissions have you been on?
Read a few minutes. You know, you're the best.
Oh, that's so sweet. Okay, so here's what I have. This week is the point in time count, homeless count, which for those of you who aren't aware is a HUD required survey that happens every year on the fourth Monday of January. So Lee Madsen and I went out on Monday night, and Officer Dan Mullen. We all went out into the community and conducted surveys. Lee and I gathered 25 surveys between us. We just went around town. People were very receptive. I only had 4 people who declined to complete a survey. And a lot of the people I talked to were actually already at the Rogue Retreat shelter. So that was really nice to know that people had had already gotten in there and were already having some sort of sheltering success. And then we have another volunteer from Peace House who is going to be filling out surveys for the meal site participants, and also some camps around town. And the only other things that I have, so this week, because it is the point in time count, there's a lot going on elsewhere in the valley. including a lot of work out in Prospect and Butte Falls. They're having sort of mini Project Community Connect fairs to try to, complete more surveys, but also sort of touch base with people in those rural areas, because that's traditionally for our county a really difficult area to serve. And then I attended the Homeless Task Force meeting last week? But Chris was also at the meeting. And Chris, if you feel like talking about anything that you heard there that you thought was interesting, I would defer to you.
I mean, there was, of course, lots of information, but I mean, I think you did a wonderful job, by the way, hosting that. That was really awesome. But I think you would probably be the expert since you've been more involved than I have, because this was still a very new area for me to learn about. So,
did you find that meeting helpful?
Yes, very. I enjoy the connections and networks. That's what I enjoy the most about those meetings. So.
Yeah, thanks for that. And I think Heidi brought it up at the retreat, that going to the Homeless Task Force meeting is really nice, because you do get to hear about what other service providers are doing throughout the valley and some of the resources that are coming online or becoming available or that might be available for your populations. We did hear from Easter Seals, which has a veterans program, and that was something that I didn't know about. And we also got a report on the Rogue Retreat Urban Campground in Medford, which has served 900 individuals since they opened in July, or since July 27th, sorry. And then the Gateway Project in Talent currently has 19 of the units occupied. And then I have something about 69 individuals. So I think they have, they're working through a waiting list to get people into those units. And, I think something that's becoming really clear here in Ashland, just for me in the last couple of weeks, and might be good for you guys to think about too, is that because of our situation between COVID and the fires and the Project Turnkey money, and, a lot of the new money that's come down that's really helped us be able to address some of our homeless issues, is that the housing capacity in Ashland has really ramped up. And while there is a lot of capacity in Medford as well, a lot more with the urban campground, Rogue Retreat got a Project Turnkey project in Medford as well, but it is not completely open yet. But what we're realizing is that we're serving a more regional population than we have served in the past, because we have resources that are desirable. And so those referrals are coming from all over our valley. And because of that, I think it's important for us to just be aware of the regional nature of our homelessness issue and our housing and shelter resources. Is that we are becoming more regional in that sense, because we have these great new resources online. All of that being said, I don't know that our people in Ashland necessarily want to go to Medford if resources become available there. And certainly in the next few months, things will be coming online in Medford. So the Navigation Center should be, it's still slated to be open in June. And then the Rogue Retreat Transitional Housing Project Turnkey project, which I can't remember what it is called, although I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. But that should be coming online here in the near future too. And it is transitional housing. So, whereas the Aura Project Turnkey is emergency shelter, people need to move from emergency shelter, some people who are ready for that step, to transitional housing. And that's something that we really don't have a lot of in the valley. So anyway, just to be aware that we used to be our own little fish in our own little pond. And now, we're definitely in a bigger pond.
Great. Thank you, Linda. Just we're near the end here. Echo. Attended the Rent Burden Task Force in Medford. And I just wonder if you could just give us a short report of what happened there.
Sure. So this was on December 14th. And just like here in Ashland, we have to do an annual rent burden event. They have to do one as well. So it was all online, and there were about maybe 8 people there who were not presenters. But it was interesting. It wasn't terribly different in terms of the content, the outline, the structure than what we've done here in the past. But the people who were there were presenting was Joe Fickner from the Center for Nonprofit Legal Services that has applied for social service grants with us in the past. So it was interesting to get that connection. Matt Brinkley, who's the planning director for the city of Medford. Angela Durant, who's a planner. Another planning department person from Medford, Carla Palladino, was there. I think Linda probably knows all these people. And then Melanie Dozier from Access, who I see and Kathy sees a lot in other meetings that we do not related to the commission. You know, Medford's average median house price is a bit lower than in Ashland. It's only $385,000. Yeah. Angela Durant went through the same stuff that Linda knows about removing impediments to affordable housing. It's that report. They have a little bit larger stock of what's called natural affordable housing in Medford. Those are sort of older homes, houses, apartments that could be improved, rehabilitated, where we don't have quite as much sort of surplus wiggle room here in Ashland as they do in Medford. Joe Fickner did have some interesting information about what they help renters with, specifically with landlord tenant conflicts. So the folks in the mobile home parks, I think, might particularly benefit from having more information from the CNPLS. They do a weekly meeting where they decide what cases they're going to take. So that's briefly what I learned from that.
Thank you. I like having our tentacles out beyond Ashland, just absorb information. Absolutely. And connect. Because as what Linda's saying is that we're much more regional in nature than we used to be. Actually, I think that historically we were just sending people there because we had no resources. So it's shifted a bit. All right. I think we're done. How about
one thing, Linda's, both Linda's, I don't want to forget to try to reschedule our site visits.
Yes.
Whenever COVID permits.
Yes.
I've learned a little bit more about ORA because of other things that I'm doing that I really would like to get that site visit. And I would really like to get the site visit at the Pallet Shelter community whenever it's possible.
And the Columbia Care facility,
yes,
as well. So as soon as, yes, we can get out in the world, we got places to go.
Yeah.
Our next meeting is February 24th.
I just saw Reese raise her hand.
Oh, I'm sorry, Reese.
Hi, real quick. Before I go, is there anything specific that any of you can identify that you would like students to do? Like just something I can get started working on before I see you next time, aside from volunteers? Any ideas at all?
You know, I actually had a conversation today, Reese, speaking about housing for SOU students. I was talking with someone at Peace House about how during the wildfires, they had placed somebody, 2 families in a single family home, and that it was working out great, but that there are a lot of students who need that as well to, as you were saying, live in a single family home together. And it was a long time ago, but our last SOU liaison actually had a whole program outlined, which was for kids to move from the dorms into single family homes that had like a SOU paid RA. And that's how they could gain references to go out into the community to rent apartments there, but also sort of learn to live cooperatively and, you know, mediate relational challenges in a housing situation. And I was thinking, now that SOU has these extra properties coming available, you know, whether that would be something that could be explored with those properties, using those properties as sort of single family cooperative housing for students. And I don't know if that's something that, I mean, it seems like it's kind of in line with what you were talking about already, and it might be of interest to students. That's just one suggestion. It's kind of like the boarding house model. But that would be my suggestion.
Thank you. I did speak to an RA, and I think I can spread the word about the idea of having those letter of recommendations, because I know, like I had mentioned, the wait list is really long. So if it helps at all to improve the chances for these students to get these apartments, that would be a really good idea. So thank you.
And Reese, Gina mentioned that survey that I think that survey is coming out of the School of Business or Environmental Studies. Do you know which department at SOU is running that survey, Gina?
We're going to be working with Eva. And so.
Okay, so Eva Skuratovich.
Yes.
Who does Social Ants. She's also on the Ashland School Board. Get in touch with Eva and be sure that SOU students submit those surveys. Gina may help with kind of making that possible too, but having the student voice in that kind of setting with those surveys is really important, because it's so easy for students to be invisible sometimes.
Exactly. And I want you to know, when we had our meeting today, I did bring up the students, because it's as if students are invisible when it comes time to housing, affordable housing. So my friend Chris has drilled that into my head. So yeah, I thought about that when we were writing it out. So thanks, Chris.
Thank you. And I think real quick, while I have the floor, Kalito, looks like you wanted to say something. Did you have something to add? They're my friend, so like, it's not weird, I promise.
Yeah. She invited me to this, like offering to like let me be a panelist or something, but like I guess just like I did want to like I did try like to summarize it in the comments, but like I think that money doesn't have to be the only incentive for how to get more like student volunteers for these types of like committees and stuff. I've noticed that a lot of the like the fuel committee, and then there's like another one that tends to like perch in front of SU. They can't guarantee pay. They can't guarantee anything. And I've noticed that definitely keeps people from actually wanting to get involved. And I think that non-monetary incentives will be an even more direct incentive to students, because a lot of them are having very direct insecurities on top of like housing. They'll also have things like food insecurity, supplies for classes and stuff, even not just like textbooks, like even like notebooks and pens and little things like that. Just being able to bring a younger crowd in for I'm not good at public speaking, sorry. These sort of things I think would be really important. Yeah.
Good job. I mean, and that's why I invited them. And I did tell other people.
It was strange to do this kind of stuff. I was doing this in Portland when I was, because I'm a Portland native, no stranger to like the houseless crisis at all. Just never been really the type of person that talks in these things. So
thanks for having me. Thank you.
So, Kalita, I'm retired SOU faculty, which is how I got connected to Reese. Anytime you want to have like a coffee date, I'll buy the beverage, any place you want to go, and I will talk your ear off. And because this is what diversity means, is as we get more diverse voices in these rooms. So thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Kathy, Callie?
Yeah, I just wanted to add for Reese and Kalito, you know, if you are hearing of students that may want to share a room with someone who has a room in their home, there is an organization we're referring a lot of fire survivors to called homeshareoregon.org. I just put it in the chat. And I want to mention it as well for a lot of us who know people, like maybe seniors who have an extra room in their home. It's like a dating app. You sign up and you create a profile, both as the homeowner and then as the prospective tenant. And it's a great way to assure safety for both parties. And it's been helping house a lot of single people.
And that's homeshare.org. Is that what you said?
Homeshareoregon.org. I put it in the chat. Oregon. And I have an etiquette question. I am so sorry. I've been private messaging people because I do that in my other Zoom meetings. But if that's not the etiquette here, if we're not supposed to do that, I won't do that. I'll just speak up.
Well, I will tell you that even if you private message somebody in the public Zoom meeting, it is all part of the public record. So all of the things that are put in there are of public record.
Always good to know.
Yes, good.
All right. I'm going to call this meeting adjourned. See you on February 24th.
Thanks, everyone.
Good job, everybody.
Nice job.
Thank you.